Hi, I'm Amy Goodman. Democracy Now! Is funded by you, not by the weapons manufacturers when we cover war or gun violence, not by the oil, gas, coal, or nuclear companies when we cover the climate catastrophe. If you believe in the power of independent media, please make your donation today of $5 or $10 or $5 or $10 a month or any amount at democracynow.org. Every dollar makes a difference, especially because generous donors are matching your contribution dollar for dollar. Thank you so much. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
And now, after three trials, we have secured the convictions of leaders of both the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers for seditious conspiracy, specifically conspiring to oppose by force the lawful transfer of presidential power.
Four members of the far-right Proud Boys, including the group's leader, Enrique Tarrio, have been convicted of seditious conspiracy for their role in the January 6th insurrection. They face decades in prison. We'll get the latest. Then to the rape and battery civil trial of Donald Trump. On Thursday, lawyers on both sides rested their cases without Trump's lawyer calling any witnesses.
The cross-examination has drawn on all sorts of myths and misperceptions about how victims behave, and we'll see if the jury's able to discard some of that and judge credibility based on the evidence.
And then to freedom to learn. Protests were held across the country this week against right-wing efforts to ban books and anti-racism education in schools. In Florida, 14 members of the Dream Defenders were arrested for staging a peaceful sit-in inside the office of Republican Governor Ron DeSantis.
Yes. So we're going to sit here until Ron DeSantis deigns to come back to his office to meet with the people of Florida who have been directly affected by his nonsense and his hate and his pandering and his petty BS.
We'll speak with a Dream Defender as well as Professor Kimberly Crenshaw. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Fighting in Sudan's capital, Khartoum, has intensified as the Sudanese army battles the Rapid Support Forces paramilitary group for strategic locations. The UN's top humanitarian official, Martin Griffiths, arrived in Port Sudan this week, where he called on combatants to allow the distribution of critically needed relief shipments to millions of civilians trapped by the fighting.
We need access. We need airlift. We need supplies that don't get looted. World Food Program today, James, informed me six trucks of theirs, which were going to Darfur, were looted en route despite assurances of safety and security. So it's a volatile environment.
The UN says the violence has forced 100,000 civilians to flee their homes with critical shortages of food, water, medicine and electricity. In Washington, D.C., President Biden signed an executive order Thursday authorizing sanctions against Sudanese leaders. The order came as the U.S. Director of National Intelligence, Avril Haines, told the Senate panel Sudan's conflict is likely to be protracted as both sides believe they can win militarily and have few incentives to come to the negotiating table. In Ukraine, the head of the Wagner Group says he'll pull his Russian mercenary forces out of the besieged city of Bakhmut by May 10th after he blasted Russia's military for failing to provide enough ammunition. Yevgeny Prigozhin said in a statement Wagner's remaining troops will withdraw to logistics camps to, quote, lick our wounds. Meanwhile, the Kremlin has accused the United States of planning what it said was a drone attack on Wednesday aimed at the official residence of Russian President Vladimir Putin. The White House dismissed the allegations as ludicrous. A jury in Washington, D.C. has convicted four members of the far-right group Proud Boys of seditious conspiracy and other felonies for their role in the January 6th Capitol insurrection and for attempting to keep Donald Trump in power after the 2020 election he lost. The Proud Boys' verdict is seen as a major victory for the Justice Department. During two previous trials, six members of another far-right group, the Oath Keepers, were also convicted of sedition. We'll have more on the Proud Boys after headlines. ProPublica reports billionaire Republican donor Harlan Crowe paid 2 years of private school tuition for the grandnephew of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, who failed to report the payments on his annual financial disclosures. Tuition at the Hidden Lake Academy in Georgia cost over $6,000 a month. ProPublica previously reported Crowe also paid money to Thomas and his relatives in an undisclosed real estate deal and that Thomas accepted luxury travel from Crowe virtually every year for decades, while failing to follow a federal law that requires him to publicly report most gifts. Meanwhile, The Washington Post reports conservative judicial activist Leonard Leo arranged for Clarence Thomas's wife, Ginny Thomas, to be paid at least $80,000 for consulting work over a decade ago. Leo asked the Republican pollster at the time, Kellyanne Conway, to bill the payments to a nonprofit group Leo advises and specified that Ginny Thomas's name should be left off any paperwork. That same year, in 2012, the nonprofit filed a brief with the Supreme Court in the landmark case Shelby County versus Holder, in which Thomas cast the deciding vote in a 5-4 ruling that gutted the Voting Rights Act of 1965. In Pakistan, at least 8 people were killed in 2 separate shootings in the town of Karam Thursday. Gunmen stormed a government school, opening fire, fatally shooting 5 teachers and 2 construction workers. Another teacher was killed after the vehicle was ambushed on a nearby road. No one has claimed responsibility. In Serbia, President Aleksandar Vučić has vowed to completely disarm the country after at least 8 people were killed in a mass shooting near the town of Mladenovac on Thursday. The suspect opened fire from his moving vehicle. He was arrested earlier today. The latest massacre came just a day after a 13-year-old boy went on a rampage at his school in the capital Belgrade, killing 8 students and a school guard. The boy was using guns that belonged to his parents, who have both been arrested. The attacks have sent shockwaves through the Balkan nation, where mass shootings are extremely rare. The last one happened in 2013. Hours before Thursday's shooting, protesters gathered outside the education ministry in Belgrade, demanding justice for the school shooting victims.
I am sincerely sorry that Serbia is now on a list of countries where things like this happen. And it has changed the feeling of going to school for all children and everyone who works there. Some mothers had to send their kids back to class today. How can they explain to children that they can safely go to school? How can we explain it to them? There are no words for something like this.
Though Serbia has strict gun control laws, thousands of illegal weapons flooded the streets following the Balkan Wars in the 1990s. Back in the United States and Georgia, at least 3 people were killed in 2 separate shootings Thursday. The gunman is accused of killing his mother and grandmother at their homes and a McDonald's manager in Moultrie. The suspect then took his own life. This came a day after another shooting in Atlanta that left at least 1 person dead and 4 injured. In Oklahoma, authorities said Wednesday they found the bodies of 7 people at a home in Henrietta. A man who was convicted of rape and was facing a child sex abuse trial is suspected of shooting dead his wife, his 3 children, and 2 teenage girls who were there for a sleepover before taking his own life. The youngest victim was 13 years old. Meanwhile, in California, a former UC Davis student was arrested Thursday in connection with 3 recent stabbings, including the killings of an unhoused man and another college student. The 21-year-old suspect was charged with murder and attempted murder. The 2 victims have been identified as David Bro, who was unhoused and a beloved figure in Davis, and University of California Davis senior Kareem Abu-Najim. Wall Street regulators halted trading in shares of PacWest and Western Alliance Thursday after shock prices for the regional banks fell dramatically after the stock prices fell. The plunge raised new fears about the health of the U.S. banking sector following the collapse of Silicon Valley and Signature Bank in March, and just days after J.P. Morgan Chase purchased First Republic in a fire sale after it became the second largest bank to fail in U.S. history. Iowa Republican Governor Kim Reynolds on Thursday pledged to sign a bill rolling back child labor protections. Among other things, the legislation will permit children as young as 14 to work in construction and demolition jobs if a guardian has granted permission. In Washington, D.C., Vermont Independent Senator Bernie Sanders called Thursday for a 32-hour work week with no pay cuts for U.S. workers. Senator Sanders also said he'll introduce legislation to more than double the federal minimum wage from $7.25 to $17 an hour.
In the year 2023, in the richest country in the history of the world, nobody should be forced to work for starvation wages. That's not a radical idea. If you work 40, 50 hours a week, you should not be living in poverty. It is time to raise the minimum wage to a living wage.
In North Carolina, the Republican-led Senate has passed legislation that would ban most abortions after 12 weeks. Republicans quickly approved the measure less than 2 days after it was introduced. Democratic Governor Roy Cooper has vowed to veto the bill, but the legislature's GOP supermajority likely has enough votes to override him. Under current North Carolina law, abortions are legal for up to 20 weeks of pregnancy. The state has been a safe haven for many people living in the South who need the procedure, as most states in the region banned abortions after the Supreme Court's gutting of Roe v. Wade. Here in New York, protests continue amidst mounting anger over the killing of street performer Jordan Neely, who was choked to death by another subway passenger Monday while being held down by another two riders. Neely, an unhoused 30-year-old black man, was crying out that he was hungry when he was fatally attacked on the train. No one has been arrested or charged despite the death being ruled a homicide by the medical examiner. Neely was a beloved fixture of the New York City subway for his performances impersonating Michael Jackson. A number of lawmakers have joined the chorus of voices condemning the vigilante-style murder. And Mayor Eric Adams, who's demonized and cut services for home unhoused people and mental illness, will flood while flooding the train system with police. New York City Council Speaker Adrian Adams said in a statement, quote, "Racism that continues to permeate throughout our society allows for a level of dehumanization that denies black people from being recognized as victims when subjected to acts of violence. Any possible mental health challenges that Jordan may have been experiencing were no reason for his life to be taken." And as King Charles prepares for his coronation Saturday, indigenous leaders in former British colonies are calling on the monarch to apologize, pay reparations, and, quote, acknowledge the horrific impacts on and legacy of genocide and colonization of the indigenous and enslaved peoples, unquote. They're also demanding the repatriation of the remains and cultural artifacts of indigenous peoples. The letter to King Charles is signed by groups in Antigua and Barbuda, Australia, the Bahamas, Belize, Canada, Grenada, Jamaica, New Zealand, Papua New Guinea, St. Kitts and Nevis, St. Lucia, St. Vincent, and the Grenadines. Britain was one of the largest slave traders in the Atlantic in the 18th century. Senior Jamaican government official Marlene Malahou-Fort spoke with Sky News Thursday.
Why not a full apology? Is it because you may have to give back the wealth of the monarchy taken from the people, taken from the places that were colonized, taken from the places where the people were enslaved? It's personal for people. The policies that are racist and unjust by virtue of nationality and ethnic background and the color of your skin, that's just not right.
Minister Malahou-Fort said the coronation has accelerated plans for Jamaica to become a republic, with a referendum taking place as early as next year. The coronation ceremony will cost British taxpayers up to $125 million at a time where many are struggling to pay for basic living expenses. This week, the Home Office Police Powers Unit wrote to anti-monarchy groups planning peaceful protests, warning them about new criminal penalties and expanded police powers that were rushed into law ahead of the coronation. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. A jury in Washington, D.C. has convicted four members of the far-right group Proud Boys of seditious conspiracy for their role in the January 6th insurrection and for attempting to keep Donald Trump in power after he lost the 2020 election. The jury convicted Proud Boys leader Enrique Tarrio, along with Joseph Biggs, Ethan Nordine, and Zachary Real, on sedition, which could carry a sentence of nearly 50 years in prison. A fifth Proud Boy, Dominique Pizzola, was found not guilty of sedition, but he was convicted with the others of numerous felonies, including obstructing an official proceeding and obstructing Congress. During two previous trials, six members of another far-right group, the Oath Keepers, were also convicted of sedition. The verdicts are seen as a major victory for the Justice Department. Attorney General Merrick Garland spoke Thursday.
Today's verdict makes clear that the Justice Department will do everything in its power to defend the American people and American democracy. Over the past 2 years, the department has secured more than 600 convictions for a wide range of criminal conduct on January 6th, as well as in the days and weeks leading up to the attack. And now, after three trials, we have secured the convictions of leaders of both the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers for seditious conspiracy, specifically conspiring to oppose by force the lawful transfer of presidential power. Our work will continue.
During the trial, federal prosecutors described the Proud Boys as Donald Trump's army, saying they were, quote, lined up behind Donald Trump and willing to commit violence on his behalf, unquote. Attorneys for the Proud Boys attempted to shift the blame for January 6th solely on the former president. Defense attorney Naib Hassan told jurors, quote, it was Donald Trump's words, it was his motivation, it was his anger that caused what occurred on January 6th in your beautiful and amazing city. It was not Enrique Tarrio. They want to use Enrique Tarrio as a scapegoat for Donald J. Trump and those in power, he said. Tarrio was convicted even though he was not in Washington during the insurrection. He had been arrested days earlier in another criminal case. We're joined now by Andy Campbell, senior editor at HuffPost. His book is titled We Are Proud Boys, How a Right-Wing Street Gang Ushered in a New Era of American Extremism. Start off, Andy, by talking about the significance of these verdicts, four verdicts, guilty verdicts for seditious conspiracy.
Right. It's a hard bar to cross, because not only did prosecutors have to prove that the Proud Boys impeded or opposed the government by force, but that they had an agreement to do so beforehand. And that last bit was a difficult bar for them to cross. But the prosecutors put together a strong case against them and proved that the Proud Boys did have an agreement even on the day to storm the Capitol. This charge is historically brought against terrorists on American soil. And prior to January 6th, the last successful prosecution was against Islamic militants who were threatening to blow up the UN. So this is the government saying we are very serious, and this trial is a bookend to its two highest profile cases for January 6th against the Oath Keepers and Proud Boys.
And how does this affect the overall trials of the January 6th defendants? I mean, we're talking about over 1,000 people have been arrested.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And certainly those prosecutions are ongoing. I mean, hundreds have come, and there will be many more to face prison time over January 6th. But this is the government proving again that the argument that these were sort of hapless protesters in the street fueled by Donald Trump is not a good one. It hasn't worked for any of the other January 6th defendants. It didn't work for the Proud Boys. It isn't working for anybody. And so even though the Proud Boys' stated goals are to fight for Trump and to fight for GOP grievances, that's not a valid excuse in front of these juries.
Who are the Proud Boys? And talk about Tarrio in particular, mm-hmm. who was, what, in Baltimore at the time?
The Proud Boys are a far-right street gang that started in 2016, ostensibly to fight for the GOP's grievances. And during January 6th, they were there statedly to have civil war, to have revolution, to have their last stand for Donald Trump. And they continue today, even though their leaders are behind bars, they continue today to fight those grievances against LGBTQ people, against drag queens, against women and abortion clinics. And so that part of the Proud Boys remains. They helped foment this atmosphere of political violence we have in this country right now. Tario was the Proud Boys' connection to Donald Trump and his allies. I spoke to Roger Stone, one of Trump's top confidants, who told me in an interview that he'd been advising the Proud Boys for years leading up to January 6th and was a good friend to Tario. Now, during the trial, prosecutors didn't get much into those relationships. Judge Tim Kelly said, you got to stick to the point in these Proud Boys defendants. But that question remains on the table. Through Tario, how close did Tario and the Proud Boys get to Donald Trump's ear directly through people like Roger Stone? Tario is their leader and their political factor. And him going behind bars is going to be disruptive, but it's not going to end them completely.
I want to go to Carmen Hernandez, an attorney for Proud Boys, Zachary Real, speaking outside the courthouse.
I don't believe he committed seditious conspiracy. He's a young man who served his country. Has never been charged with a crime of violence, has never been convicted of a crime of violence, but the jury has spoken, and that's our system of justice. Very disappointed in the verdict. I think as a society, we turn to criminal law too often. What Mr. Trump did or didn't do is of no moment to me or Mr. Real. But he did, he was the one who called the rally and had everyone show up.
Your response, Andy Campbell.
Well, all of these defendants absolutely had a big part in gathering resources, equipment, funding, allies to D.C. for January 6th, which one of the defendants, Joseph Biggs, called civil war and revolution. They were ready for something big. And on the day after Trump's fiery speech at the Ellipse, they led the march from there to the Capitol and were the first to breach the Capitol itself. So certainly they have responsibility. But Ms. Hernandez is actually right in the sense that prosecutions aren't the only aspect here that are going to tamp down our extremist crisis, because we still have Proud Boys in the street week after week, along with neo-Nazis and other militants. They still have support from the GOP and from law enforcement and from right-wing media. And until the GOP and those other elements pull their soldiers out of the street and rebuff them, which they have not done since before January 6th or after, we are going to see this kind of thing continue. We're going to see men in makeshift body armor and weaponry outside all sorts of American civic events. And so going forward, we're looking for an entire culture shift, not just prosecutions.
Can you talk about who testified in the trial? From police officers who were attacked defending the Capitol to FBI agents to some of the Proud Boys themselves.
Right. There were a number of police officers who were testifying in the trial, and a police officer who was expected to testify on behalf of the Proud Boys, an officer who had a relationship prior to January 6th with Tario, because he was gathering information from the extremist groups amassing there. But that relationship ended up being a little too close, and so this officer pleaded the fifth and didn't end up helping the Proud Boys at all. But the government also secured some key testimony from other Proud Boys who pleaded guilty in lieu of cooperating with the government. One of them is Jeremy Bertino of North Carolina, who had, prior to this trial, pleaded guilty to seditious conspiracy already. And he testified that the Proud Boys were ready to take the reins of that march, of that movement headed to the Capitol that day. Another Proud Boy named Matthew Green, who testified against his own, called them the tip of the spear that day. prosecutors put together a really, really good picture of just how much preparation went into January 6th that day. And, you know, while the defense argues that the Proud Boys didn't have a direct plan to storm the Capitol on January 6th, prosecutors showed the jury that that plan, that conspiracy, could have come together the day of, on that march. They realized they were surrounded by all of these people. They realized the tools that they had in front of them, and they used that mob to push forward into the Capitol so that they could upend the election. And then, of course, afterward, there were mountains of evidence and testimony showing that the Proud Boys celebrated what they'd done. They delayed the certification of Joe Biden as president, and they were super happy about it.
So the unindicted person here that was brought up by both the defense and the prosecution was President Trump. His famous stand back and stand down comment during the debate. What does this mean for him?
Well, certainly, I mean, it shows that the president was fueling what is now essentially a terrorist cell in the government's eyes. And we know for a fact that after he said stand back, stand by, the Proud Boys began gearing up for civil war for their president. And we know that Trump and his allies and right-wing media, the Tucker Carlsons of the world, have refused to rebuff these guys at all, to the point where they still believe they have the full support of the president or former president and his allies out in the street. And so this isn't going to mean anything for Trump in terms of charges being thrown his way, I don't believe. But it certainly, you know, adds an underline to the fact that Trump has celebrated and tacitly supported these extremist elements since he took office. And until his politicians around him, until the right wing rebuffs them, we are seeing these extremist elements marching today, regardless of the fact that their fellow Proud Boys and Oath Keepers are in prison.
And let me correct what I said, as you corrected me. Stand back and stand by, President Trump said.
Right.
Finally, Andy Campbell, what happens to the Proud Boys now?
Right. Like I said, unfortunately, the prosecutions are not enough. The Proud Boys leaders are probably going to go to jail for decades each. And that will certainly put pressure on the organization. But these Proud Boys have always shown resiliency when their leaders go to jail. They are working on the behest of the GOP's grievances, not their organization, and not even Donald Trump anymore. They know what they have to do. They have their orders, which is to commit violence for the cause, and they're out there doing it today, every single weekend. And so the organization isn't going away, and our extremist crisis at large isn't going anywhere. We have to tell, you know, the GOP, we have to tell law enforcement, and we have to tell right-wing media to pull these forces out of the street, or else we're going to continue to have this problem going into the next election and just going into regular American civic life.
Andy Campbell, senior editor at HuffPost. His book is We Are Proud Boys, How a Right-Wing Street Gang Ushered in a New Era of American Extremism. Next up, an update on the rape and battery trial of Donald Trump. On Thursday, lawyers on both sides rested their cases. Trump's lawyer did not call a single witness. He claims from Ireland, where he was playing golf, that he's going to testify. That's Trump. Stay with us.
And now you do what they told you. And now you do what they told you. And now you do what they told you. Some of those that work forces are the same that burn crosses. Some of those that work forces are the same that burn crosses.
Killing in the name of by Rage Against the Machine. This week it was announced the band is being inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. In a statement, the band thanked all the activists, organizers, rebels, and revolutionaries past, present, and future who've inspired our art, they said. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Former President Donald Trump's legal team rested its case Thursday in the rape, battery, and defamation trial brought by writer E. Jean Carroll without Trump's lawyer calling a single witness. E. Jean Carroll has accused Trump of raping her in the dressing room of Bergdorf Goodman in the 90s. She was able to file the civil case against Trump decades later because New York opened a one-year window on the statute of limitations for adult survivors of sexual assault. In addition to Carroll, her legal team called two other witnesses to testify about Trump's pattern of assaulting women. Jessica Leeds testified Trump repeatedly groped her during a flight